Hi. How's everybody doing? Radio Labyrinth. What season is this? This is season 7, episode 42. Really winding down the year. Not many weeks left. It is October. This episode comes out on October 22nd. And so happy October 22nd, which means we're what? A week away from, oh yeah, my coworker's wedding, Jared Yamamoto. He's getting married on the 29th. And then the 30th, we're all going to get together at Atlanta Pizza in Euro. And you're free to come in costume if you like. Bring your kids. It's a Sunday, and we'd love to see you out there. I will be there. In the morning, I have christening class because we're having our son christened in Boston, and you have to take a class.
Mm-hmm.
What would your mom have said about that, Jeff?
Some Catholic.
There you go. It's not the holy day of obligation, but it is an obligation. By the way, that's from 12 to 3 p.m. at Atlanta Pizza in Euro. I might be a little late just because of the class, but I'll leave as soon as it's finished.
Man, we'll hold it down.
Yeah, you'll hold Probably. It down.
I mean, somebody will just be on the one side of the glory hole until you get there.
Somebody's got to welcome the people in. We're going to be busy in the bathroom.
Yeah, I won't have any breakfast, so when I get there, everybody can fill me up.
Really? That shit is gross.
Let's see. Coming up on November 5th, it's CoosaCon, second annual CoosaCon in Rome, Georgia. And you can find out all about that at CoosaCon.com, which is CoosaCon.com. We are going to be there. Jeff and Dustin will be hosting two panels. One of them a Walking Dead one, and the other one with Ming, who has been on our show a bunch of times, and hopefully we can get to come on and promote it before the event. Let's see. So we're recording this at present on a Tuesday evening. It is, what day of the year is it? It's the 18th, if I'm correct.
Yep.
And I got the Google alert set because the Yankees are playing the Cleveland Guardians for the final game of their AL division series. Before the Yankees, if they win, go on and get swept by the Houston assholes. I'm not a big fan of Houston. I didn't like them when they were in the National League because they're whiners then and they're whiners now, and they're also cheaters. So screw you, Houston fans.
What would President Bush think of that?
Well, I wouldn't care very much because I own the Texas Rangers.
Okay.
Yeah, it really doesn't matter to me what happens with the Houston Astros, but I was a partner in owning the Texas Rangers, who used to play at Enron Field. Remember Enron? Sorry about your 401k. But I had nothing to do with that. It's just, poor old Enron. But I'm the guy that, I brought in Nolan Ryan, and you can see me that Nolan Ryan documentary, which is on Netflix right now. Pretty good. I'm in it a bunch because I'm a nice guy, unlike the last fella. And I have a brain, unlike the current fella. So, yeah, people like me. Also like that guy that was after me. He was pretty decent. He was a pretty decent fella. I liked him. What's his name? Barack. Yeah, I like Barack. He's a pretty decent fella. Not nuts. Knows how to finish a sentence. Doesn't eat ice cream all the time. Doesn't have a gigantic hump on the back of his head. Doesn't sell all sorts of crazy powders and stuff that help cure your erection problems. Like Dr. Wizard of Oz. Never played football for Georgia. Isn't a minister who evicts people. I mean, politics used to be fun. Look at all these idiots now. Anyway, sorry. Jeff, you went and saw a doubleheader, and not a baseball doubleheader. You saw two movies back to back.
Well, one Friday and one Saturday.
One Friday and one Saturday. You saw The Last Starfighter, which you wrote a fan fiction version of back in elementary, in junior high, called the Laser Light Weekend. Isn't that nice that I remember that? Aren't you glad I remember that? But it was a cool story. I don't remember the gist of your story, but I know why you wrote it. It was inspired by this film, the first movie to use full computer animation for space scenes. It was a good movie. And you also saw Night of the Comet with Catherine Mary Stewart, who is in both of those movies. So did you meet her and talk to her?
Yeah, she had like a table set, like basically like a little con outside the theater. She had a table and pictures she was selling and signing autographs. And
yeah. Did you get her autographs?
No, I didn't do it.
Was she charging?
Yeah. It was like $20 for a photo or $40 for one from each movie.
Wow. That's expensive.
Yeah, it's pretty decent actually compared to like Dragon Con prices.
Now, I reached out to her about a month ago to see if she'd want to come on to promote it, and she didn't. And then I got huffy, and that's why I didn't want to go.
I didn't know. I didn't even hear about it until David Harrison posted it in the Radio Shack.
Yeah, they have tons of fun events at this theater in Sandy Springs, Sandy Springs Cinema, where we did the viewing party for Zombieland 2, I believe.
Yeah.
Even more zombies. But I've talked to the one of the guys there that I've talked to before. He's really busy. He travels a lot. But I would love to get them on to promote some of their stuff, and anytime they have somebody on. So did you talk to anybody there?
Yeah, I connected with the two ladies that were running the screenings.
Uh-huh.
And I told them we'd love to have people on to promote and our
Shelley Smalls.
Link. Yeah, Shelley Smalls.
Yeah, she's a comedian, used to do burlesque, you know, funny stuff.
Yeah, and the other lady is a burlesque performer also.
What's her name?
Sunny Midnight.
Sunny Midnight.
Yeah.
Yeah, Shelley's a very nice person.
Yeah.
We used to do stuff with them real early on in the regular guys run at Rock 100.5. Well, awesome. Stay in touch with her, and we'll keep promoting them any time, because it's a cool experience and it's a good theater.
It was a lot of fun, and the seats are awesome in that theater.
Oh yeah, they are.
Yeah.
So what was it like watching The Last Starfighter and Night of the Comet again?
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I asked her about eating Raul,
mm-hmm.
because there's kind of like a mini reunion of eating Raul.
Yeah.
With Robert Beltran and Mary, what's her name?
Right. Was Catherine Mary Stewart in that?
No, she's not in Eating Raul, but Eating Raul had come out 2 years before
mm-hmm.
Night of the Comet.
Yeah.
So I wondered if Eating Raul had been a thing, like, you know, now it's a cult classic, and it's a part of the Criterion collection, and
yeah,
it's like highly well revered movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I wondered in 1982 or 1984 or whatever it was, how people perceived it, if they were excited that there was like a mini reunion of Eating Raul among the cast of Night of the Comet.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that she and the girl that played her sister mostly kept to themselves, and they didn't really interact with all the other people. I mean, she had
scenes Ellie Maroney.
She had scenes with Robert Beltran, but she said that she remembers everyone being excited that the people from Eating Raul had signed on to do their movie.
I forgot Mary Warnoff is in that film.
Yeah.
Well, if you've never seen those movies, and if you're Gen X and you've never seen those movies, one or the other, or not, or both, then what's wrong with you? You need to. It's your Christian duty, or whatever deity you worship. I don't want to go all Kanye on the Christians. So cool. Well, yeah, stay in touch with them and let's get them on.
Whatever. And she said that the Last Starfighter sequel reboot.
Yeah,
it is, and it's made some progress in the development. The guy that wrote the original got the rights back.
Oh yeah,
in 2020.
I didn't know.
So he's been able to have the rights back, and now he's trying to shop it around. She and Lance Guest are both supposed to have at least cameos in the new one.
Yeah, how about Robert Preston?
No, he's not going to be.
Won't be in it.
I mean, maybe somebody would play that character.
Yeah.
He's dead, Tim.
Oh.
I hate to break the news to you.
I thought he was still alive. He was young and spry back then. He got
yeah.
Yeah. There's trouble in the Codan Armada City. Who's Dan O'Hurley? I've seen that guy before. Oh, Dan O'Hurley. He's in it. Yeah, you know who he is, don't you? He's the CEO of OCP.
Mm-hmm.
From RoboCop. Last week we talked about our favorite. We each picked two of our favorite Gen X horror movies, and that would be from 1980 to 1990, movies that came out while we were in high school or college or whatever. I guess you started out 1980 in elementary school, and by 1990, well on our way through college. Some of us quicker than others because I took four more years. So, Dustin, you put a poll up, and how did we do? How did they do?
They did really good. We had a lot of great responses. You know, I think we had well over 100, you know, 100, almost 120 results. No, everybody voted. We had over 40 movies on the list, and we narrowed it down to the top 10. I figured we would start with number 10 and kind of work our way to the number one position.
All right. Counting them down.
Number 10 is Poltergeist from 1982, American supernatural horror film directed by Tobe Hooper and written by Steven Spielberg. It's a story of a family who moves into a new home that was inadvertently built on top of a cemetery. It was a very popular film. It was filmed around the same time of E.T., so they were kind of filmed in the same subdivision that they made on the lot, and actually used a lot of the same crew as well. They would flip-flop back and forth. And, of course, there's the ongoing rumors that Tobe Hooper, who directed the film, kind of was ghost-directed by Steven Spielberg himself. You know, and a lot of those family scenes or a lot of the iconic look of the film really does have a Steven Spielberg look to it.
Oh, yeah. I thought he did direct it.
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, and that's one thing he's always denied, and I don't know if he denied it just for the sake of Tobe Hooper, you know, to keep that relationship there. But, yeah, you know, a lot of people, including people that were on the film, said that Spielberg was there a lot. And so, yeah, I mean, either way, it turned out to be a great film. And spawned, you know, a few sequels.
Terrible, terrible sequels.
Yeah.
And the second one wasn't as bad, but the third one, the High Rise one, that one was really bad.
Yeah,
there was some really scary shit in Poltergeist.
And the first one, absolutely, the clown under the bed.
Yeah, and the when the tree came through the window. The kid.
Yeah,
yeah.
The guy.
Yeah, eats the food.
His face off,
and the face melts into the sink.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that was a creepy-ass movie. And then the little lady, crossover children, all are welcome. She was creepy.
You guys mind hanging back here? You're interfering with my vibes. I don't remember exactly what she said, but...
Go into the light, Carolyn. Yeah. Oh, don't go into the light. Don't go into the light. When she's watching the TV at night and her hands are on it and it's snowy and she goes, That was creepy. That is one of the OG scary films. Ghost and creepiness and special effects, real special effects, and Craig T. Nelson, man. M-O-O-N, that spells scary.
And yeah, he was, if I'm not mistaken, he was also homeless before this movie. I think
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was this movie kind of got him back on a path. Because he was a struggling actor at the time.
Yeah.
Wow. So Poltergeist is number 10.
What's next?
Next we have The Fog.
The Fog.
1980 American supernatural horror film directed by John Carpenter, who also co-wrote the screenplay and created all the music for the film. It stars Adrian Barbeau, Jamie Lee Curtis, Tom Atkins, Janet Leigh, and Hal Holbrook. and it tells the story of a strange glowing fog that sweeps over a small coastal town in California, bringing with it vengeful ghosts of mariners who were killed in a shipwreck there 100 years before, and they've come back to claim revenge on the people that caused their death, the town's past. So
that was a scary movie, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Adrienne Barbeau, you couldn't do, you could do worse, I suppose. She was a scream queen. You had two scream queens in that movie. And Adrienne Barbeau and Hal Holbrook also in Twilight Zone or
Creepshow.
Creepshow.
Yeah, actually, you had three scream queens in there if you think about it, because Janet Leigh also was in there as well from Psycho. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this movie really was the pet project of Carpenter. He kind of took over this whole town to make this movie and used everyone in his that he'd ever worked with before, because the scale of the movie was so large.
Yeah.
And he had never had that type of film in front of him before. Everything else he'd done, he'd been able to use small sets or closed sets and reuse people. But with this one, he needed so many people. He literally had a whole town for a summer. I like the end of it. My favorite part was you think that Hal Holbrook is going to like skate by because he facilitated the return of everything. And no, they come back for him.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, hey.
Oh, hey, there's no spoiler alerts on these 40-year-old movies. The Evil Dead from 1981. This one, an American supernatural horror film written and directed by Sam Raimi and starring Bruce Campbell. Of course, everyone knows this is five college kids vacationing at an isolated cabin in a remote wooded area. And after they find an audio tape and play it, it releases demons from the Necronomicon, and they must, you know, fight through and survive, with only the one surviving, which is Ash. And that starts the legacy of, you know, those Evil Dead movies and Bruce Campbell having a career for the next 20 years.
Now, did you guys find that movie to be scary when it was on? When you saw it the first time, or did you find it to be funny and gruesome?
First one was scary. Second one was funny.
Yeah. It was scary, but I don't know. It was,
there was so much involved. I mean, this movie was miserable to film, from what I understand. You know, they were working on their own budget. I mean, they didn't really, this is something that a group of friends got together and made, and they filmed it in a little town outside of where I'm from in East Tennessee, and where that's where the cabin is. And so that was always a big thing growing up, was, you know, group of friends would get together and that you would drive out to try to find the cabin. And, you know, I went, I think, two or three times before we found out that the guy had tore the cabin down pretty much right after the film was done, to prevent this from happening.
Right.
But yeah, it's still, you know, it's one of those movies that everything has been, you know, the ripple effect from this movie is amazing. You know, everybody uses a piece from it. It's been redone and remade so many times.
Yep.
All the practical special effects are just, you know, still hold up.
You know, while you were doing that, I was trying to find a name of an early 70s horror movie that used to scare me. And did you know that in 1975, there was a horror film done completely in American Sign Language?
No.
And no.
It was called Defula.
They only called it that because no one could hear what the title was. That's what it was.
No one can hear you scream, literally.
Let's see. The next on the list, They Live, which we went over last week.
Definitely not scary, but definitely a good horror movie.
Next on the list is Hellraiser, the original Hellraiser, written and directed by Clive Barker, based on Barker's 1986 novella, The Hellbound Heart. And it was also Barker's directorial debut. He had never done a film of this scale before.
Yep. Jeff and I saw that in the movies, at the movie theater.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then I saw the sequel later on, but with someone else. But did you guys watch the new one?
Yeah.
Holy shit, what a terrible movie.
Yeah, Dustin. I texted Dustin to tell me if it was worth watching or not, and he didn't. He didn't speak highly of it, so I haven't watched it yet. But I probably will eventually.
Don't. It's not good.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, for all the with the new one, the reboot, for all the talk about Pinhead and the change of Pinhead to a, you know, from a male to a female, and then the arguing that in the book it is more of a female character, that had no relevance on this movie whatsoever. I mean, this movie was just, I mean, if you watch the original Hellraiser, the story, even though it's a Clive Barker story, and I like Clive Barker, it's not the greatest story in the world. And this highlight, the new one highlights the fact that the only thing that was really good about those movies were the Cenobites. And everyone just wanted to see how the Cenobites were made, who they were, and watch them tear people apart. And that's what they did in the first movie very well. In this new movie, not so much. They had too much of, it was almost like they had a conscience in this movie, where that was the epitome of the Cenobites, was no conscience.
No.
Before.
Indiscriminate murder.
Mm-hmm. And enjoyable.
I didn't like the people that the protagonists in the movie either. I didn't find them to be very compelling. They're kind of boring.
Yeah, unlike in the first one, the stepdad and the stepmom, and
you know, to the point, the guy at the beginning of Hellraiser, the most recent one, who, you know, leads the young people into his place so he can watch them get torn apart, that guy was cool. But the original is definitely better, and it was scary just because of the Cenobites.
Yeah, and the special effects and everything being, you know, ran through Barker in the first one, it did, you know, it felt more like one of his stories. This one felt more like it was just too clean. Everything was too shiny and new. But yeah, Hellraiser's number five. Number four is A Nightmare on Elm Street, the first one.
Yeah, that's definitely a scary movie.
Oh, yeah. Wes Craven is the first installment in a franchise that would run to this day. Heather Langenkamp, John Saxon, Robert Englund, of course, is Freddy Krueger, and introducing Johnny Depp. This was his debut film.
Yes. He doesn't make it. Spoiler alert. Elaine Meyer's girlfriend gets killed.
Yeah. And dragged through with a body bag through the middle of the hallway.
I killed Beth. Heather Langenkamp, and I had a major crush on her back when that movie came out.
She's in that new Netflix show.
What one?
Midnight Club.
Yeah, and it took me half the episode to realize that was her. I mean, because it's weird, in all the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, they always tried to age her up.
Yes.
And now she's aged up on her own, and it looks nothing like how they aged her up.
Yeah. Oh, that was another thing that Catherine Mary Stewart said, that originally for Night of the Comet, Heather Langenkamp was supposed to be her sister.
Oh, yeah?
Before they cast that other girl.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Number three is Joel Schumacher's The Lost Boys. 1987 vampire. Corey Haim, Jason Patrick, Kiefer Sutherland, Jamie Gertz, Corey Feldman, Diane Wiest.
Wiest, yeah.
Edward Herman, Alex Winter. Classic story of a family moving to a California beach town full of vampires. And
I don't remember anything being scary in this movie. Was there any scares in it?
No.
Not really.
Maybe the beginning
or whatever.
Maybe the beginning when, you know, you don't know what's going on and people are getting ripped out of cars and into the air. You know, that was kind of creepy. But once the family moved into town, it was like it was a slow build, you know, back up. And then it was just back and forth between, you know, Kiefer Sutherland's little crew and the Frog Brothers. And for the years, I thought that was Tommy Chong playing the Frog Brothers' dad in the background.
He did?
Come to find out it wasn't. No, yeah, I thought it was.
They are going to do a bad reboot of The Lost Boys, unfortunately.
Yeah, no. I wish they'd just, you know, just make a Peter Pan story and be done with it.
Jason Patrick was always the front runner to play Jim Morrison in a movie. Oh, Travolta first. Jason Patrick. Of course, it ended up going to what's his name?
Val Kilmer.
Yeah. Val Kilmer.
Yeah. This movie pushed him. I mean, yeah, this movie particularly pushed him as a Jim Morrison-esque character. Yeah.
Even though the song, the People Are Strangers, performed by Echo and the Bunnymen. And then you had the Cry Little Sister song, and of course you had the shirtless saxophone guy.
Yeah, Terry Capello.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he still does that at cons.
Yeah.
Yeah. He still brings out the sax, doesn't wear the chain anymore, but brings out the sax and plays the song and sings it. more power to him. Number two is An American Werewolf in London from 1981.
That's a scary movie.
And a horror comedy, written by Landis. The title, of course, is a cross between An American in Paris and Werewolf of London.
Yeah.
And the film plot follows two American backpackers, David and Jack, who are attacked by a werewolf while traveling in England, causing David to question whether he will become a werewolf under the next full moon. And, of course, you know, everyone that he does end up killing shows up to him as a zombie, you know, walking the earth until he is dead. Mm-hmm. And so that's where the comedy, for most part, comes from, is all the zombies that are like, yeah, man, you dead yet? You just walk out in front of a truck. It'd be real easy. Yeah. They're just trying to convince him to kill himself. But great special effects, the practical effects. That was...
Was that Rick Baker?
Rick Baker.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did the original, and now it sits in Joe Rogan's podcast studio.
Oh, it does.
The werewolf. He's got the full werewolf mock up of, you know, where it shows in the theater where he's crawling out, you know, attacking him. That whole werewolf is in their waiting room in Joe Rogan's office. Yeah. But yeah, great movie, funny movie. I try to watch it at least once a year.
They made another one, didn't they? That Paris?
Yeah, American Werewolf from Paris. They it used it was the guy from That Thing You Do that played the drummer. You know, it was modernized, so the kids were going to a rave in like an underground like catacombs in Paris, and you know, werewolves had kind of figured out a way to kind of like Blade, they'd figured out a way to herd a lot of food into one area. And then take them over. And of course, one gets the same process. One gets bit and slowly turns. And werewolf movies always had that. I don't know. I don't know if it was because werewolf lore was not as popular as you know, vampire lore. So people had a lot of play with how they would, you know, turn or how often they would turn or things that would kill them. And, but this one tried to stay, pretty close to the original as far as the tone. So it does have a lot of comedy, and it does have a lot more jump scares than, An American Werewolf in London, only because, you know, I think that's what they had to lean on was the scares. And because they couldn't touch Landis's comedy, you know, when it came to
putting a movie together. American Werewolf in London led to Wolfen and all those Howling movies, which are werewolf movies. Howling 2, definitely the best one if you like blood and nudity together. The end, Sybil Danning, 10 minutes.
And the top of our Gen X horror movie poll is, not surprisingly, The Thing by John Carpenter.
The Thing. God, everybody loves that. Everybody loves The Thing.
This is a 1982 film directed by John Carpenter from a screenplay by Bill Lancaster based on a 1938 John W. Campbell novella called Who Goes There? And it tells the story of a group of American researchers in Antarctica who encounter the eponymous Thing, a parasitic extraterrestrial life form that assimilates then imitates other organisms. The group is overcome by paranoia and conflict as they learn that they can no longer trust each other and that any of them could be the Thing. And it stars Kurt Russell as the team's helicopter pilot, R.J. McCready, with Wilford Brimley, T.K. Carter, David Klein, Keith David, Richard Dysart, Charles Hallinan, Peter Maloney, Richard Mazur, Donald Moffat, Joe Polis, and Thomas Waits.
Richard Mazur, who was the younger man that Mrs. Romano was dating on One Day at a Time. Great actor. Hey, you can find him on, half that cast has been on Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal podcast.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is definitely was scary as shit. I remember watching it at my dad's house because every weekend they had that disc player, the RCA disc player, and they go rent movies. And they rented the thing. Man, I couldn't sleep that night because it was scary. An alien and the isolation of being, you know, in a remote location and not knowing that the person you're talking to, whether they're human or something, is going to rip the shit out of you. It's just very scary. And the dog, of course, was scary.
Yeah. Yeah. I always thought it was crazy. If they'd have had the ability to turn the subtitles on, they could have avoided the whole problem. Because if you turn the subtitles on now and watch it, the guy in Norwegian tells you, the dog is an alien. It's going to kill you. I'm trying to kill it. And then they shoot him.
Well, awesome poll. Awesome job, Dustin, putting it together and corralling it. We should do more of these. That was fun. And thank you to everybody that contributed. It's a nice little scary movie thing. We have, what, 2 more weeks of scariness? No, 1 more week of scariness. So I wonder what we'll do next week. We shall see. Thank you, Dustin.
You're welcome.
What is my name? Mason? James?
James Mason.
James Mason. Yes, very relevant voice to be doing in 2022, considering he's been dead for 40 years or so. But if you've seen Lolita or Salem's Lot or a host of other movies, you know who he is. Yes. We'd like to say thank you to Atlanta Pizza and Euro, the longtime sponsor of Radio Labyrinth. Thank you to Mike Hall, the owner, who has a very nice jigsaw to cut holes in bathroom walls with. Drop by the restaurant and grab a nice cold local craft beer like Wicked Weed's Pernicious IPA cans and Tantrum Brewing's Poems at Midnight, Sour Berliner Weisse, also on tap. If you're a business or a corporate client or a master vampire who is looking for a food truck or a blood truck for your next private event or catered luncheon, please contact Mike Hall at Atlanta Pizza and Euro by calling 770-483-6228. Open for dine-in and takeout Monday through Friday from 11 to 9, Saturday 12 noon to 9, and closed on Sundays so people can watch football. Do you have a commercial or residential construction printing need? Do you need a coffin and dirt for your master? We won't get that there, but you will get the other things. What are you waiting for? Contact LDI Repro Printing of Athens. In Athens, Greece? No, Georgia. Since 2005, with a fast turnaround and very affordable prices, call 706-316-9366, or you can email them at athens@ldiline.com. Now I'm going to go move some ashtrays around while Bonnie Bedelia is turned into a vampire.
Ming's up for coming on next week, by the way.
Oh, perfect. We'll talk cool. Scary movies with Ming, and we'll talk Kusakon. So have him tell him to bring his favorite scary films, and we'll also talk Kusakon. We could talk about all sorts of things. Besides scary films, since we did that.
Yeah, I'll have seen Clerks 3 by then.
And I'm literally bought it, Jeff, and I'm sitting on it until you watch it. Because I'm not gonna watch it until you watch it.
You have to pay for it or can you stream it?
You have to rent it.
Yeah, you have to rent it or you can buy it for $14.99.
But you can rent it, correct?
Yeah. On Vudu.
I'm going to have to rent that because I want to watch it and be able to talk about it with you guys. So that's my homework for the next week.
Yeah, I'm watching it Thursday night with Kevin.
Another guest that we may have or may not have on soon, hopefully soon because we like him, is Casper Kelly from Your Pretty Face is Going to Hell and Squidbillies and all sorts of things. Too Many Cooks. Very talented and funny man who will reassure us that Adult Swim is not going to be squashed. Yeah, and a lot of speculation in the last week that Cartoon Network was going to go away, but a story was put out today in the aggregators that said, no, Cartoon Network will always have a home here. So hopefully that'll be the case, because I'd hate to lose all those great shows. And hate to not have more of the stuff we like. I'm still waiting on the Venture Brothers movie, right?
When's that going to come out?
I haven't seen anything. Hopefully by Christmas. But we'd love to have Casper come on. He's a great guy. And we can find out more about Your Pretty Face, the animated episodes, when they're going to be out and everything.
Just heard the latest news on the radio.
News. And now for the latest news.
A couple of things in the news that I saw. Alan Moore basically told the Watchmen showrunner to never bother him again. And this is Alan Moore, who created the Watchmen, the original 12 issue comic book from DC Comics, the alternate reality or alternate hero universe where the heroes were more realistic and gritty, came out around the same time as The Dark Knight. All these comic books in the 80s that revolutionized the comic book industry and also set the tone for, you know, the Batman movies. And, you know, there was eventually a Watchmen movie, which a lot of people don't like, but I don't think it's a bad film at all. I did not like the series. I don't think it had anything to do with.
He won't be participating in the series, Tim. He's in England.
He basically hated it. And you can read all these great quotes of his if you just Google his name. Talking about the Watchmen show, he's basically they took something that I created, and he also didn't like the DC Comics series that came out sort of before the series started. He didn't like anything. He liked the original, you know, piece that he did, and I tend to agree with him. Although I liked the sequel comic book, I thought that story where they blended the Watchmen universe with the DC universe, I thought that was pretty good. But the series, that was garbage. And I hope they don't make more.
Interesting guy to hear, though. He can rant on. He can just tear somebody down. I mean, he's so good at it.
The comic book is called Doomsday Clock. The Simpsons and Bob's Burgers is going to do a crossover in the Treehouse of Horror. That might get me to actually watch Treehouse of Horror or an episode of The Simpsons. I haven't watched The Simpsons.
The Treehouse of Horror, the only one that I watch anymore.
Really? Yeah. I don't care about Lisa. And my thought is that that's all Lisa's stories every week, but I don't know if that's true or not. That'll be out, what, October 30th, the night after our big event at Atlanta Pizza in Euro. So I'll be watching that.
Yeah, get home with a full belly of pizza and you can sit down and watch The Simpsons Treehouse of Terror.
The Simpsons Family Guy crossover episodes were great.
Yeah. those were funny.
Yeah. Let's see what else. Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
They're dragging me into Marvel Universe. Captain America 4. He's going to be playing Thunderbolt Ross, General Ross. Previously played by William Hurt. Or no. Is it William Hurt?
Yeah, it's William Hurt.
Passed away.
Last year.
Harrison Ford probably won't be flying anything.
But Thunderbolt Ross is Red Hulk, so yeah, that ought to be that. I want to see like what a Hulk face of Harrison Ford will look like, because you know they'll computer generate everything else. But yeah,
Chewie, I'm a Hulk. I don't know. I saw that they almost brought Ed Norton back to be the Hulk and She-Hulk.
In the finale, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why they would have done that. I like the Ed Norton Hulk movie a lot. I thought it was great. I like Ed Norton as the Hulk, or at least as I also like the Ang Lee one. A lot of people don't like that. But I thought Eric Bana was great as Bruce. So
it's good as a standalone. as a standalone film outside of the MCU, the Eric Bana one is interesting.
And Nick Nolte, Ang Lee directed it, and Nick Nolte, I believe, becomes the Abomination.
Their version, yeah.
Nick Nolte. Then he got drunk. And starting in 2023, the NFL will be milking you for more. That's right. They're adding a Black Friday game, which means you can only watch it on Amazon. And so there'll be games.
I've watched every one of these streaming games on Amazon, and still no boobs.
No, I know. Isn't that crazy?
Nuts. What do you want? So why bother streaming it?
Chris Collinsworth. No, he's not on that. I meant Al Michaels.
Who wants to see my gigantic tip? Why does anybody think that was a farcical call? He's really getting it now with all the false teeth. Juju Smith.
Must be tough for him with all those names now. Everybody's got hyphenated names.
Yeah.
Marquez Valdez Scandling.
Who died?
Who died?
Who died?
What's wrong? Who died?
What happened? Who died?
So let's pour one on the ground for the late, great Robbie Coltrane. Probably best known for playing Hagrid in the Harry Potter series, but also a very accomplished British comedic actor, dramatic actor. He was in James Bond movies. I believe he's in GoldenEye, is he not?
Well, yeah, he was in GoldenEye in 95. Yeah.
And I believe he's also in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Yeah.
Just a good guy. And then toward the end of his life, you know, the sad thing about him passing and his and being involved in the Harry Potter universe is that he was friends with J.K. Rowling, and he stood up for her just as a friend. You know, you always want to support your friends, I guess. And people were posting, I'm glad he's dead. He's a transphobe.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that was all over Twitter, which is, again, proof.
You don't say that after the guy dies.
Oh, they did, though. You know, he allied himself with a TERF. He deserves to die. Anyway, fuck those people. He ended up being, he was in Flash Gordon.
Mm-hmm. Krull,
yeah.
Krull.
In Krull. Ghost Dance, which I don't remember very much. National Lampoon's European Vacation.
Nuns on the Run was the one where I first saw him with, he played with Eric Idle.
Yeah.
That was funny. That was real funny.
And that movie Absolute Beginners, which is not a good movie, but has a good soundtrack. He's in that. He's a Black Adder. The World Is Not Enough. Yeah, he's in that. He plays the Valentin Zukovsky. And just in a ton of stuff. So also,
he was a good actor.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. And he'll be missed. That's too bad. So rest in peace, Robbie Coltrane. You turf lover. You're the wizard, Addy. You're the woman, Hattie.
Views.
Or.
And snooze.
Yeah, last week was Halloween Ends.
Yeah.
Which,
did not watch. I couldn't remember my password, and I'm like, fuck it, I don't need to watch.
You know what? It's a little bit of a spoiler, but nothing to the story. I was so cheesed that it's a 2-hour movie. Okay. And the first kill by Michael Myers doesn't happen until the halfway point of the movie.
Oh, man.
And then you don't see him again until the last 10 minutes.
All right, screw that.
Yeah, it's shit. It's shit. It's so much shit. They have a fight at the end of the movie, him and her. The one that, you know, you wanted to see. And if you'd walked in the last 15 minutes of this movie, you would have gotten the whole thing in 15 minutes. But no, you sit through this movie where at the beginning of the movie, the first time you see Michael Myers, and I'm spoilers, but he's trapped in the sewer with his arm stuck in the wall and he can't get out. And this kid walks up to him and he touches the kid, and now the kid becomes Michael Myers.
Get out.
It's shit.
Why in the hell would you, if you're going to go through the trouble of making this movie, and Jamie Lee Curtis knows better, bleh. The Rob Zombie ones suck. The modern ones with Jamie Lee Curtis. I like H2O also.
Yeah,
it was good. If
I ranked them, it would be Halloween 1, Halloween 2, Halloween 3, and then H2O.
Yeah,
that sounds about right.
And H2O was in canon, so, well, according to these assholes. Anyway, what's the other thing? I didn't watch Documentary Now.
Yeah, Documentary Now starts tonight, I think. Tonight. So I screwed up kind of putting it on last week's. Shantaram. That Charlie Hunnam show on Apple TV. I haven't had a chance to watch that yet, but I plan to. It looks pretty good. They're hyping the hell out of it. You can't even watch anything on Apple TV without a commercial for it.
Woke me up in the middle of the night last night. Hey, you watch Shantaram? You gonna watch this?
All right. So this week, American Horror Story comes back. Horror Story NYC.
Yeah.
What is? So is this the story or is this an anthology one again?
This is the series. On FX, set in New York City. In it? I don't know. I haven't looked at any of the cast. I noped out of this like 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, I did too.
I tried to watch last season's.
And for like a couple of years, I would dip back in like the first one, and I would watch one, maybe two or three of them. And then I'm still out.
Yeah.
You got Joe Mantello, Billy Lord. Zachary Quinto is back. Russell Tovey, I don't know who that is. Leslie Grossman, Charlie Carver, Sandra Bernhard. Dennis O'Hare is back. Patty LuPone, she'll just scream at everybody. And then you have you don't have Sarah Paulson. You don't see Sarah Paulson in this, unfortunately. I like her. Cal Penn. Makes an appearance, and just a bunch of other people I don't know. It might be worth a view just to see if it's any good.
Yeah, I might dip back in for a couple to see, but I probably will nope out again.
Ryan Murphy. Yeah, Ryan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Number two, The Peripheral on Prime. This is the new series from the people that made Westworld with Chloe Grace Moretz.
Looks interesting.
Yeah, it's based on a William Gibson novel.
Wonder if it's any good.
I'll watch anything that Chloe Grace Moretz is in.
Yeah, she's a refrigerator, you know.
I'll give it to views for me. Keeps with the spooky theme. Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities comes to Netflix this week.
Seems interesting.
Yeah, it looks good.
Yeah. I think he only wrote or whatever two of these.
Yeah.
And the rest of them are based on other stories.
It took him years to put it together. But it's, you know, it's kind of like his version of a series of a, you know, creep show or.
Yeah, like a creep show or
like
Twilight
Zone. Yeah, kind of thing.
Sesame Street Elf is in it.
Who?
Sesame Street Elf.
I don't know who that is.
Ishmael Cruz Cordova from Lord of the Rings.
Oh, Lord of the Rings.
Who used to be on Sesame Street? Andrew Lincoln, Crispin Glover. A whole bunch of people. Kate Micucci, DJ Qualls, Rupert Grint. Yeah, dude, this looks like something worth.
Yeah, this looks like it's gonna be good. Yeah. It's a views for me.
Yeah,
me I'm too.
Gonna use. What's it on again? Oh, Netflix.
Netflix.
Yes. Yes. I'm going to write it down on this list I have here of things I never get to. But I promise that I will. And I even doodled Michael Myers in the show.
Yes, not a digital drawing. Cabinet of Curiosities. If you're a Howard Stern fan, you'll recognize it. It's a curio cabinet. Just has jizz stains on it. That's all I got for this week, guys. Don't forget, if you're watching this video on YouTube and you've stumbled upon it and you said, oh, this wasn't so bad, please like and subscribe. Leave a comment. If you don't like it, keep it moving, bitch. And if you listen to the podcast each and every week in the audio, you know, what have yous on your whatnots, just go to YouTube, find us, subscribe and like, because that helps all of us. And how many subscribers do we have now? Still stuck at 500?
No, we're 540.
Okay, so we only need 460 more.
Hey, that's right. We're on the other side of it now.
Yeah, the cool thing is we're not buying them. See, we're not buying followers. It's a scam. Right. Don't buy followers.
Organic. Let's keep it organic, just like everything else.
We're getting some new people joining the Radio Shack and stuff. So maybe they'll come over and subscribe.
Yeah, yeah, please do. Please do. Follow us on social media, the Radio Shack. Also, our main Facebook page. And we also have Patreon, patreon.com/TimAndrews. And if you're listening, don't forget, I am going to get your shirts out. I just had to wait for, payday. But I will get those shirts to you. And what else? Oh, yeah, at @radio_labyrinth on Twitter. And we have Radio Labyrinth on Instagram. And that's all I got for this week, fellas. You got anything else?
Get well soon to Ira. Him and his family went to Disney World and they come down with COVID.
Did he have sex with Mickey Mouse?
No, he blames the Chewbacca at the Star Wars World.
Oh, yeah.
Laugh it up, fuzzball.
Cough it up, fuzzball. All right, guys. Thank you and get well, Ira and family. We will talk to you next week. Until that time, please remember to keep it in canon.